a lot of the people around me are way more experienced. They've been around the paddock for decades longer than I have. It's just being respectful, being willing to expose myself as someone who needs to learn from them. Be respectful, be mindful of the experience of those around me.
Welcome to the Sports Business Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Berger. You can find the Sports Business Radio Podcast 15 years, over 600 episodes featuring conversations with the biggest names in sports like David Stern, Pete Carroll, Chris Evert, Jeannie Buss, Michael Vick, Andre Iguodala, Mark Cuban, Tom Rinaldi, Charles Barkley, Jack Nicklaus, Lindsey Vonn, Eric Spoelstra, Aaron Rodgers, and Steve Nash on iTunes or at sportsbusinessradio.com. Subscribe, rate, and review the Sports Business Radio Podcast on iTunes, and everyone who posts a review on iTunes will be eligible to be selected to join us in our studio audience at one of our Sports Business Radio roadshows presented by Boingo. And we're also on Spotify now, so you can find us there. Follow us in between podcasts on Twitter at SB Radio. We've been named a top 50 follow by Forbes.com for three consecutive years, and on Instagram at Sports Business Radio. Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. George Steinbrenner IV is my guest on this week's edition, co-owner and partner with Harding Steinbrenner Racing. Yes, he is related to the boss and the namesake of the boss. He's 22 years old. I had a chance to meet him this past weekend at the Portland Grand Prix. His driver, Colton Herta, is age 19. They've become the youngest duo to ever win an IndyCar race. They're injecting some youth into IndyCar. It was really interesting to tour his transporter, sit in the pits with him a little bit, and I think you're going to enjoy the conversation that we have on this week's edition of Sports Business Radio. I'm joined, as always, by our executive producer, Brian Griggs. Griggs, how's it going?
I'm good, and 22, man. Can you imagine? I can't. When I was 22, I was not... doing what he's doing. So it's pretty impressive what he's doing, and you know, the family name and the really cool interview. You tell some good stories. Impressed by his being at 22 and what he's already doing.
Well, and the thing I like is this. It would be so easy for someone with the last name of Steinbrenner to write a big check,
right,
to be given a team, to be fast-tracked, no pun intended, to team ownership. But he didn't do that. He paid his dues. He mopped floors. He answered phones.
Yep.
He put drinks in the refrigerator, got people coffee. And I think because of that, he's earned the respect of his peers and his team and the people who are older than him. Because you know what? It's got to be tough to be 22 and have people look at you and go, okay, I'm going to listen to the 22-year-old, or I'm going to respect the 22-year-old, and that they know their stuff. And
yeah,
he obviously knows his stuff, especially after watching him up close and in person at the race this past weekend. He really knows his stuff. So I think he's exactly what IndyCar needs in order to relate to a younger audience. And let's face it, the Andretti's, the Unser's, the Penske's, they're getting a little long in the tooth. And wouldn't it be great if George Steinbrenner IV was the one who came along and with that championship pedigree was able to help attract a new fan and legion of fans for IndyCar. So
yep,
looking forward to that conversation. College football got underway this past weekend. Griggs, ABC and ESPN had the top three games as far as TV ratings went. Number three, Duke versus Alabama, a 3.1 overnight. Number two, Houston at Oklahoma. How good did Jalen Hurts look as the quarterback of Oklahoma?
Yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma looks like they're going to have three Heisman Trophy winners in a row at quarterback.
They could, yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and now Jalen Hurts. He put up six touchdowns in game one. I mean, if he puts up those kinds of stats every game, I don't know who's going to beat him. So 3.6 overnight for that game. And then the number one rated game of the weekend was Oregon versus Auburn, pitting two top 20 teams against each other, a 4.4 overnight. Griggs, you're Ducks, man. They cannot win the big game. They cannot hold on to a lead. What a disappointing loss for them.
Yeah, it was. I had to leave the house after that game.
You were a little hot under the collar.
I was a little hot under the collar because it was like too many chances to win that game. But
they owned that game.
They had it.
They controlled the whole game, and in typical Oregon Ducks fashion,
They have a meltdown in the last 5 minutes, and they let the team back. They always leave the door open.
Always.
That's the best way I can put it, is they always leave the door open. And when you leave the door open against good teams, an SEC team like Auburn, that's a bad recipe.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend, though. I agree. Oklahoma looks legit. Jalen Hurts is incredible, and it's going to be fun. College football is always fun because you just never know what's going to happen each weekend. So there was some fun games and more to come. Notre Dame struggled a little bit. It was kind of interesting to see how they ended up pulling it out, but, you know, it's fun. I love it.
All right, I'm putting you on the spot right now.
All right.
Is the national championship going to be any other combination than Alabama-Clemson?
I was just talking, before we went on the air, one of the gals walked by here in the studio, and we were talking about the same thing, and I'm like, we're both like, I don't want it to be that, but I don't see it any other way. Maybe Oklahoma slips in, but I just don't, I think it's Alabama-Clemson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Clemson is seemingly historically good.
Yeah.
And they probably have the best quarterback in the country, and,
sure.
and he's got to be your other Heisman favorite.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it just looks like, and that's the thing that really bums me about college football, is I want to see something different.
Yeah.
But as I look forward to the end of the season, I don't see a different result.
No,
I see Alabama Clemson again, unless, you know, one of their star players gets hurt. And I know Moses got hurt on defense for Alabama, so maybe that changes things because he was basically the quarterback of that defense.
Right.
But I think we're headed for the same result, and that's not good for TV ratings.
No.
I think it's bad for the overall interest of college football because we've seen this movie over and over and over again, and we want to see a different movie.
Yep, I agree. It's tough, but I mean, they just step above. They're so much better than everybody else. I just don't see any other outcome, even with a couple of injuries. They're so stacked, and the coaches are, they're coached so well, and I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
All right, NFL gets started this Thursday. Green Bay at Chicago at Soldier Field. You know, it's going to be an interesting season. We've already seen some interesting holdouts. Zeke Elliott, as we record this, looks like he's headed back to Dallas. Rumors are that he's going to sign the highest contract ever paid out to a running back. It's so interesting to see the back and forth between Jerry Jones and Zeke Elliott's camp and what they want and how the contract gets structured and how much guaranteed money there is and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, one thing you can't argue is running backs are getting paid less and less. So their leverage is not great. Then you see what's happened to someone like Todd Gurley, who signed the most recent highest paid running back contract, and now he's hurt. He doesn't look to be the same guy that they signed when they signed that contract. So, you know, with running backs now, you can find a good running back in the third or fourth round, or you find a free agent, but they're not making as much as they used to. And then LeSean McCoy got cut from the Bills, gets picked up within 24 hours by the Kansas City Chiefs. 1 year, $3 million, so not a lot of money, but he did have some money coming to him. The Bills cut him, according to most people, because I think he had a $9.6 million guarantee coming to him. And they felt like they had other running backs on the roster. So it really became an economic move for the Bills. But it's interesting to see. We've seen some big names change uniforms. So yeah. Antonio Brown to the Raiders, Le'Veon Bell to the Jets.
Odell Beckham to Cleveland.
So it's going to be interesting to see how those players perform in their new uniforms and with their new teams, but who do you like in the upcoming season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think, like you said, I think more and more the game gets even more physical, and these players that won 2 years at running back where they're actually the star of the show, and then it's an injury that takes them down, or it's a, you know, a contract thing. And yeah, it's just, I think Patriots look good. I think they're, again, kind of like Alabama Clemson. Patriots are always going to be in that top four at the end of the season. They just always are.
Unless they lose Brady.
Yeah. So, NFL is just always interesting. It's such a long series, so much drama, so many injuries. It's hard to predict what team's going to be at the end, but I love the Thursday night game coming up because it's just a great rivalry, so that'll be fun to watch.
I am going to go with an old AFC rivalry.
Cool.
To play in the Super Bowl.
All right.
I'm taking Kansas City in the AFC.
Nice.
And I'm taking Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
In the NFC. I love it. The Clowney acquisition.
Yep.
I think their defense is maybe the best in the NFL now.
Yeah.
They've got some monsters on that defense. And, you know, if you look at that, if you're Russell Wilson and you score 17 points a game, you're probably going to win a lot of games. You don't have to score 30 points a game because your defense is going to shut people down. So I think Russell Wilson is capable of scoring 17 to 20 points a game, even though he lost Doug Baldwin Jr., our guest from last week's show, and some other pieces. But I really think Seattle's going to be in the mix. So I'm taking Kansas City and Seattle. I think New England will be good again. I wouldn't bet against them, but I just think Kansas City learned a lot from that loss in the AFC Championship to New England. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to be bigger and better. What do you think is going to happen with the Browns? Because that is the team that everyone's talking about. The over-under is 9 for the Browns. Crazy. Would you take over or under?
No, I'm not buying the Browns. I just can't do it. I can't do it. I think they're going to be a little bit young, and there's going to be some drama and some maybe infighting that's going to mess them up. You got some crazy egos on that team now. You got a lot of opinionated players, coaches. So it'll be fun to watch how it progresses. But I think obviously they're going to be better, I think, than last year. But I don't think they're going to be all the way to the end.
So they won 7 games last year, 7-8-1. The over-under is 9. I'm also going to go under.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be good. I don't think they're going to be as good as people say. And I also think, like you said, Freddie Kitchens is the head coach now. I cannot wait to see how he handles the first Baker Mayfield or Odell Beckham Jr. or Myles Garrett or Jarvis Landry blow up, because there's a lot of alpha dogs in that locker room.
Yeah.
And it is coming, and we'll see how that gets handled. And you know what? Cleveland has a tough early schedule, so they could get out of the gate 1-3, and the wheels could come off pretty quickly.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Last headline of the week. This is a big one. David Glass and the Glass family has officially sold the Kansas City Royals after much speculation and rumors about whether or not the team would be sold. They were sold to a group led by Kansas City businessman John Sherman for $1 billion. Griggs, this is Kansas City. This isn't New York. This isn't LA. This isn't Chicago. This is Kansas City. And they just went for $1 billion. The sale marks the third time the team has changed ownership after being founded by Ewing Kaufman back in 1969. The Glass family purchased the team in 1999. So here's an organization that is used to stable ownership. It'll be interesting to see how the Sherman family does. Sherman also was a minority owner of the Cleveland Indians, so he has that baseball knowledge and passion. He's divested his interest in the Indians in order to purchase the Royals. But Griggs, $1 billion for the Kansas City Royals. I was a little bit surprised by that price
tag. Yeah, it seems a little high for me, too. When I saw that, too, I was like, oh, wow, $1 billion for a baseball team, which, I don't know, you don't hear as much about the big money of baseball. I guess it's still around there, because that's a big price tag for a team, for sure.
All right, before we get to the George Steinbrenner, the fourth interview, we have had some great guests on Sports Business Radio recently. If you're new to our podcast, or if you just need to catch up on past episodes, Damian Lillard, Tim Howard, Jeannie Buss, Rick Welts, Doug Baldwin Jr., Alex Honnold from Free Solo. Some great guests, Griggs. So I would encourage people to go back and listen to those conversations. I know I learned a ton from listening to those people on this show.
Yeah, I mean, Doug Baldwin was fascinating.
So eloquent.
Alex Holt. I mean, yeah, you mentioned all those ones you just mentioned were so cool. But yeah, I really loved the Doug Baldwin. I just really got a lot more respect, even more than I had for him from that interview.
Well, and like I said last week when he was on, that's a guy that, while he did great things on the NFL field in an 8-year career, I won't be surprised if he's governor or part of Congress or, you know, does something great in the private sector going forward. He's that eloquent. He's that smart. He went to Stanford, and he's doing really good things in the community, rolling up his sleeves. So I thought it was really insightful what he had to say. And I would say all of our guests have been very insightful recently, and we have a good list of guests coming up. You're going to want to stay tuned to see who those are. But coming up on this week's show and coming up next, George Steinbrenner IV, the youngest IndyCar owner at age 22. He's already finding success. And with a name like Steinbrenner, championships, it's what it's all about. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. One word you wouldn't typically associate with a dress shirt is comfort. However, the folks over at Mizzen & Main are changing this. Their shirts are incredibly comfortable. Mizzen & Main makes dress shirts for men that fixes everything that's ever been wrong with shirts for so long. Their shirts breathe, stretch, and wick away moisture. It's like athletic wear disguised as a dress shirt, making them great for travel. They've taken the hassle out of looking great through wrinkle resistance and the ability to wash your shirts at home. No more last-minute ironing, no more after-work trips to the dry cleaner. It's a shirt that's worked for thousands of customers, including hundreds of professional athletes like J.J. Watt and Phil Mickelson. Head over to MizzenAndMain.com and use promo code SBR to get $10 off your dress shirt. That's MizzenAndMain.com, code SBR. I can tell you one thing. I'll be wearing Mizzen & Main dress shirts at all future Sports Business Radio roadshows and Sports PR Summit events. I can't wait. Blinder is the way high-performance teams connect their talent with the media and fans. It lets communications managers provide unprecedented access to their athletes, entertainers, and executives while respecting everyone's privacy and time. Blinder makes phone calls magic. Request a demo today at blinderhq.com/SB Radio. Joining me now on the Blinder guest line is George Steinbrenner IV. You can follow him on Twitter at @GSteinbrenner4. He is the co-owner and partner of Harding Steinbrenner Racing. You can follow them on Twitter at @FollowHSRacing. He's currently fielding the number 88 car in the NTT IndyCar Series. You can find them online at HardingSteinbrenner.com. Steinbrenner is the grandson of legendary Yankees owner George Steinbrenner III, the boss. Now the younger George has forged his own road to team ownership at the ripe age of 22. He's the youngest team owner in IndyCar history. His grandfather delivered 7 titles to the Bronx and the New York Yankees during his iconic 37-year tenure in New York. Well, George, thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. It was great to meet you in person and tour your transporter at this past weekend's Portland Grand Prix. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So you guys finished 4th this past weekend. I think your 2nd highest finish of the season. How did you get to 4th place? And I know you had the pole position, but it seems like overall that's a successful weekend for you.
Yeah, I'd say so. It was our 2nd best finish of the year. We had a little bit of trouble with the tires on the first stint. By the end of it, we dropped back a few positions, but by the time we got him in the pits, got him on black tires, he was the quickest car on track again. So, it let us, finish 4th. So the car was really good all day. It just didn't work out to where we could finish up front, but it's really tough to win in IndyCar. So everything kind of has to go right for you.
One of the things that I was struck by touring your transporter and kind of watching you guys in the pits a little bit is just how exact everything is. The computer, the weight of things. I had never done that before, and I don't think the average fan realizes how exact and specific everything has to be.
Oh, yeah. Everything has to be down to inches, milliseconds, on track, in the pits. In the garage before the race, it all has to be as precise as you can possibly get it. And that's what it takes to win. And that's why with a spec series, it can be so close and competitive, because, you know, the difference between 1st and 6th is, you know, a very small difference.
Now, what happens after the race? Do you guys huddle in the transporter and discuss what just happened while it's fresh in your mind? Do you have a cooling down period? Take us through that process.
Usually we'll have a debrief after the race. Sort of talk about what happened, what we could have done differently. You know, take what happened. And since we're still a new team, you know, take what happened and figure out how to A, replicate it, or B, you know, make sure it doesn't happen again, that sort of stuff. Just go over and go over the race, essentially.
And who's in that meeting? It's obviously you. It's your driver. Who else is in there?
It's myself, the driver, Mike, co-owner of the team when he's there, Brian Barnhart, our team president and race caller, our engineers, and crew chief usually is in there as well.
All right, I want to go back in time to when you were younger and how you first got your start in racing and your passion for racing. So your cousin Tony Renna was an IndyCar driver in the early 2000s. I know your uncle Chris Simmons serves as the engineer for Scott Dixon. But when did you first develop the passion for IndyCar racing or auto racing in general?
I'd have to say probably the passion itself, you know, minus just watching my cousin or you know, watching it if it was on TV by chance when my family was watching. I think when I actually really started getting interested, I was probably around 9 or 10 when I you know, took the time and took the initiative to follow it myself and not just, you know, watch it when it was on and become an actual fan of the series, learn all the drivers, learn all the teams, learn all the tracks, learn when all the races were, watch all the races, stuff like that, go to a couple of races.
And when
so
you
probably about 9 or 10.
Yeah, when you were 9 or 10, when you went to the races, did they let you up close or were you sitting in the stands? Like, what kind of behind-the-scenes access did you get in order to develop the knowledge that you have now?
Well, I it would usually be in the stands. I was, I would have, you know, you could walk the paddock at any age, really. But in terms of the race itself, I would watch from the stands because you had to be 18 to be in the pits during the race. So for me, my 18th birthday, that was one of the big things for me. I can finally go into the pits and watch the race.
That's awesome. So one of the things I told you when I saw you this last Friday is I've heard and read so many stories of the fact that you did the dirty work and you got your hands dirty before you became a team owner. Obviously, with your last name, it could have been a fast track for you to team ownership. But, you know, you answered phones, you mopped floors, you filled coolers and fridges, you got people coffee. How did that help you with the people you work with now and maybe just show you all the ins and outs of what racing is so you have that knowledge now?
That was huge. I mean, being able to, you know, do the cleaning in the shop, answer the phones, at the track, really, working logistics and getting lunch for the crew and taking care of the driver. It sort of just gave me the most inside look you can have on sort of how the team operates during the race weekend and the things that have to be done because the small things that have to be done and making sure there's enough water in the coolers, making sure that the crew gets fed, you know, stuff like that. It's the really important stuff that, you know, I had to do. So therefore I was able to learn how to do it. So it helps me now in understanding, you know, how that bottom level works.
One of the quotes I read from you is you said, whenever I enter a new room, there are always going to be the preconceived notions when it comes to my name. But I also believe that how I handle myself when I walk into that room is what determines how people will perceive me in the end. So I try and do that the right way. What's the right way?
Especially being in this environment where a lot of the people around me are way more experienced, have been around the paddock for decades longer than I have. It's just being respectful and being willing to expose myself as someone who needs to learn from them, not being too assertive when someone with 30 years more experience than me has something to tell me. You know, it's all about learning for me, really. Still being so new to this, so in the sport itself, it's really just a be respectful, be mindful of the experience of those around me.
But you bring up a good point with people being older than you and knowing when to be assertive and when not to be assertive. if you have to be assertive, what is the right way to be assertive with people who are older and more experienced?
I think you have to, you really have to gain their respect first, their respect for knowledge of the situations. Like if I feel very confident, and I feel confident that the person I'm being assertive to feels confident in my knowledge, I have to be sure of that first. And it's getting easier and easier, obviously, as I learn more. But being sure of myself and being sure that the person I'm speaking to is sure of me as well.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio with our guest, George Steinbrenner IV. We'll be right back after this.
When it comes to stadiums and arenas, every sports pro knows wireless wins. And when it comes to the best wireless technology for your venue, look no further than Boingo Wireless. Boingo is the largest operator of indoor wireless networks in the U.S., providing state-of-the-art Wi-Fi and cellular services that power amazing fan experiences. And Boingo makes keeping your stadium connected easy today and in the future. Thinking about 5G? Boingo's expert team helps you carry the ball through a complex technology landscape to deliver wireless solutions that will delight fans and deepen loyalty season after season. Here's another kicker. Boingo is simply the best connected experience for your business. With Boingo, stadiums and arenas enjoy unique operating efficiencies, revenue opportunities, and digital insights into their fan base. That's a win-win. Boingo works with Major League Sports venues like Soldier Field, Vivint Smart Home Arena, State Farm Arena, and University Stadiums like University of Louisville and K-State. Our thanks to Boingo for their continued support of Sports Business Radio. We're excited to showcase how technology is changing the business of sports. If you would like more information on Boingo Wireless, visit boingo.com or email sports@boingo.com.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with our guest, George Steinbrenner IV.
I want to talk about the Huerta family for a minute. Brian is someone who's a legendary person in the IndyCar world, and it sounds like you really, he's a mentor for you. And then ironically now, his son Colton is your 19-year-old star driver. They've been a big part of your life. Let's start with Brian. What did you learn from him? And I know he's one of the people that kind of made you put in that dirty work and get your hands dirty a little bit as you learn the business.
Yeah, I mean, Brian from the very start has been, as you said, a mentor to me. He was a single car team owner for years, and that's how I met him. He was running Brian Hurd Autosport in IndyCar, and actually in Indy Lights at the time. He hadn't even run an IndyCar yet. So just sort of seeing his and learning from his experience as a one car team owner back when I was first getting really, really interested in IndyCar. And then obviously he took me under his wing and brought me over to, so I worked as an intern for his rallycross program. And so that was sort of the start of the learning process for me, and he's been at the forefront of it from the beginning. Since that rallycross program, I still go to him to seeking advice, and thankfully now that web has expanded to people like Michael Andretti and JF Thorman, president of Andretti Autosport. People I can, Brian Barnhart, our team president now, who's been in the sport for a really long time, more people that I can sort of web out to and ask for advice, but it all sort of usually comes back to Brian as my sort of main, my main teacher.
Yeah.
Essentially.
It's great to have a mentor like that. And then Colton, again, your 19-year-old star driver, he's been so successful. You guys have become the youngest duo to ever win an IndyCar race together. He is someone that you've become friends with too. So not only is he your driver, but you're around the same age. He's 19, you're 22. It sounds like you guys have a friendship as well.
A very good one, yeah. It started with, he was running Skip Barber cars out of Lime Rock Park in 2012. And I'd known Brian for a couple of years at this point. And my stepfather, who's business partners with Brian, said we're going to go to Connecticut and see Colton race. I knew of Colton. I hadn't met him yet. And I said, sure, yeah, anytime I can see new cars go around a new track, I'm willing and ready. And then obviously met Colton there, and we kind of hit it off immediately, became fast friends, and ever since we were in communications. Obviously, when he ran USF 2000s in 2014, followed him around, and I was the year that I really started going to a lot of the races, and so to follow him around, and then when he moved over to Europe, staying in contact with him, staying friendly with him, and then when he wanted to come back in America, we kind of looked at each other and said, you know what, let's go for it. You're two crazy teenagers with a crazy idea and a crazy vision, and we were able to make it happen.
No, I love it. And I bet, like I said, because of the fact that you're friends, you can probably be candid with each other. And I imagine you're on the same page on a lot of things.
We are, and we can be very candid. But it helps that we both have very similar demeanors, and we both have very, very similar senses of humor and ways about ourselves. So we sort of just flow very well together. Very high comfort level with each other.
So the tough part about doing business with friends is, you know, there's that line of business and friendship. His star is rising quickly. Do you anticipate being able to continue to attach yourself to him and vice versa as his career continues? Or do you ever worry that, oh my gosh, you know, maybe we're going to lose him to another team?
You know, that's always a possibility when you're, you know, a star free agent and everyone's sort of knocking on your door, calling your phone. And you know, that there might come a day where there's an offer out there that's better for him. But you know, understanding that it would be better for him, it would be hard for me to with our friendship and the friendship that will likely continue afterward, it would be hard to I don't want to say hold him back, but sort of get in his way to
right.
a degree.
Right.
We're going to work our butts off to make sure that we're the best place for him. And right now we think we are. And but if the time comes one day where we're not anymore, then I see no problem in our friendship continuing or becoming a problem in that instance.
Well, and explain to people, because again, IndyCar racing is so different than other team sports, because you can have collaborations and partnerships with people. And I know that you guys have had some sort of a collaboration and partnership with the Andretti team. How does that work, and how could that work going forward in the future for you, for Colton, and for the Andrettis?
So this, obviously in Indy Lights, when Colton and I ran in Indy Lights, it was in partnership, direct partnership with Andretti. It was run out of their program. It was an Andretti Steinbrenner Indy Lights car. And this season, partnering with Harding Racing and forming Harding Steinbrenner, we formed a technical alliance with Andretti's technical company, Andretti Technologies. So it was technical support. So the relationship is still there. The partnership to a degree is still there. And they supplied engineering and technical support for us throughout the season. And moving forward, we look to keep that relationship strong. What that looks like, we're not sure yet. Obviously, having the technical partnership will be a given, but how that partnership will either stay the same or expand is something that we're going to work on in the future, for sure.
The technology of IndyCar continues to evolve. Next series, the Aero screen becomes a part of the car. What challenges will that bring to the car?
We're not entirely sure yet. There's still testing to be done. Looking forward to the results of those testing. I'm actually very hopeful that this will work very well for IndyCar, because it was designed obviously in conjunction with Red Bull. IndyCar's been working for years to find a workable solution to the exposed cockpit issue that we've seen the last couple of years. The halo that the FIA cars are running wouldn't work really in IndyCar, because with the high speeds of those ovals, something hits the halo, it probably won't be structurally sound with an object hitting it at 240 miles an hour. So working really hard on a not the quick solution, but the proper one. So the work that IndyCar has put in, I'm obviously very hopeful that it works out. And we'll see after the testing is done and we're ready to bolt it on the chassis that it's the right way to go.
In 2021, the engine package is going to change for the first time in IndyCar. You're going to have a hybrid motor. What are your thoughts on instituting that new technology? Because that's pretty different.
It is, and it's the right way to go. Obviously, hybrid technology is a step forward from what we're working with now, and you know, the common concerns are what is it going to sound like and stuff like that. And then everyone can be assured that the engines will still be loud, the cars will still be very loud. They'll be more powerful and more efficient, yet still be that loud. So it's a win-win, really, all the way around.
I want to talk about sponsorships for a minute. It's such an integral, vital part to the success of teams like yours. How is that world right now? Because I know, you know, we see sponsorships in Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA, and they seem to be growing. In IndyCar, are they also growing at a pace where you like to see, or is it stagnant? Where do you see that space right now?
It's growing really with the reintegrated popularity of the series. You know, the series hit a low point a little while ago. And now that it's rising steadily and rising consistently, you know, we're seeing the sponsorship dollars sort of mirror that, and the support for IndyCar sort of mirror that as well. Obviously, it's not at the level of the stick and ball sports, the NBA, MLB, stuff like that. But it's growing to sort of getting back to the level where all the teams feel a little more comfortable than they did a few years ago.
Why do you think that's happening? Is it the injection of youth with people like you and Colton? Is it the cars, the drivers? What is that that has gotten it back on track, so to speak? No pun intended.
I think starting off being a unified entity helped the re-merger, I guess. And since then, it's sort of been a slow growth. But it's also, you know, the work that NBC is doing, that the series is doing, and sort of getting themselves out there. The different race venues with promotion, and we're seeing upticks in attendance, we're seeing upticks in TV viewership. I think it's just more of a awareness spreading that's helping a lot. And obviously the work that IndyCar and especially NBC has done in sort of getting IndyCar out there and getting more eyeballs on it has paid dividends and will continue to.
Yeah, I love the fact that you just know that everything's on NBC TV and their digital properties now. You don't have to look all over the place wondering, well, where's the race this weekend? So I really like that it's in one place. You look like you have a lot of fun around the racetrack. What's the best part about being an IndyCar team owner?
The best part for me is just that I get to go racing. that's really it. I mean, I get to be involved in a sport that I've loved nearly my whole life. And it just brings a smile to my face anytime I go to the track. And it's sort of just an environment I've always loved and an environment that I've always wanted to be a part of. So to finally be a part of it kind of energizes me.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio with our guest, George Steinbrenner IV. We'll be right back after this.
I can't tell you how many times over the years on Sports Business Radio that a PR person is asked to listen in on my interviews with their CEO, GM, coach, or athlete. They also want to call us in our studio so that we don't have the phone number of the high-profile person who is calling us for our interview. Blinder has developed a technology that solves these issues that have existed for years. Use Blinder's unique technology to connect your athlete, coach, or executive's personal phone for any interview without sharing their private information. Remotely control the phone interviews, set start and finish times, monitor online or with the Blinder mobile app, and listen to a recording of the call at any time for complete peace of mind. With Blinder, you're finally in control. The system works globally from any phone line, Scheduling a call takes seconds. Customizable push notifications ensure a connection, and no one needs to download anything to make or receive a call. PR people everywhere should be using this helpful technology. Blinder is now the technology we use for the official guest line for Sports Business Radio. Learn how to start your free trial by visiting blinderhq.com/SB Radio. Now we're talking.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with our guest, George Steinbrenner IV.
Your name is so synonymous with baseball. Was there ever any kind of tug of war, passion-wise, to go baseball versus racing? And I know your dad, Hank, is co-chair of the Yankees.
Correct. Yeah, and that pull to baseball has been there. I mean, I was handed the bat and a ball when I was, you know, right out of the hospital as a baby. I've always loved baseball, and I think it's a similar reason that I fell in love with racing. It's you know, the two sports I think that are most, I guess, data driven. You know, baseball so data driven that I got into statistics and analytics when I was a kid, and so integrating into racing was fairly simple for me based on the fact that it's all data driven. It's, you know, there are machines out there with drivers, so the amount of data and analytics, it was an environment that felt welcoming and felt, you know, I was sort of soaking it all up as a stat geek. And so the pull to baseball was and is always there. I watch every game I can. I think the easiest part of it was, you know, baseball, my family's got baseball pretty well covered for the foreseeable future, you know, with my father and my uncle. And so in racing, you know, I could kind of branch out and kind of make something of my own and you know, run it and see it as my own vision. And branch out in my second passion.
Yeah, and if you think about IndyCar racing, Penske's, Andretti's, Chip Ganassi, there's some pretty famous last names in IndyCar racing as well.
Of course, yeah. Obviously, starting with Roger, who's, you know, been 50 years in this and has grown a massive, you know, portfolio and a great name in Penske. You know, it's a very recognizable last name. I mean, go on the highway and you'll see his trucks everywhere. And it all started with racing. So it's people like that, like, you know, Andretti, Ganassi, Penske, you know, those are the kind of names where me being a 23-year-old sitting in an owner's meeting, I kind of like to keep my mouth shut and let those guys talk and learn from them just by, you know, soaking in their presence, really.
I want to go back to your namesake, George III, the boss, 7 titles in 37 years as the owner of the Yankees. He passed in 2010, I believe. So that makes you 11 or 12, I think, when he passed. How much time did you spend with him, and what kind of an influence was he on your life?
He was a big influence on me, and the influence from him came more from a personal level. You know, I did know him the last 11, 12 years of his life, so I knew family man George. I knew Grandpa George. I knew, I saw, you know, his love for his family, and that's really the grandfather I knew. I didn't know really much of business George. It was all family. So for me, you know, I only know secondhand the sort of stories and larger than life persona that he exuded and the large impression he left on America. It was sort of just grandpa to me. You know, it was very personal, and I learned a lot on a personal level from him on how to carry yourself, how to be the right kind of person.
Is there a story or a memory that you have that stands out in your mind from him?
When I was a kid, I don't know, just because I'm sitting in here down in Florida at the moment, he would always, it's just a funny story, he would always, he would come and visit every single one of his grandchildren every Sunday. He would go, you know, because he had four children who had a bunch of grandchildren, so he'd make four visits every Sunday, and he would come and visit, and he would always call my room his room, because it's, you know, a guy I have the same name as him. So he's like, well, this is George's room, right? Well, yeah, that's my room. So he'd come in my room and just sort of take it over. It was funny. And that was always one of the best memories I had, because, you know, it was a recurring memory happening every Sunday. It was funny.
That's so great. That's so great that you had that regular contact with him. And, you know, like you said, it's a side that a lot of people never got to see. And, you know, I've heard from various people that he was a really good family person. You got to throw out the first pitch at the Little League World Series recently. I bet that was a lot of fun.
I would have if it did not rain. But unfortunately, yeah, I wasn't able to throw out the first pitch.
Oh, no.
But I was able to spend the day in Williamsport, which was really cool. Obviously, I was a guest of Honda. And I was able to do some fan interactions at Williamsport for a little bit. So it was still a good day. You know, it just, you know, the crowning jewel of the event, I guess, I wasn't able to do. But it was a good day overall.
Well, they better have you back to throw out the first pitch in the future so you get that done when it's not raining.
I hope so. I would love to go back.
All right, last question for you. Goals for the future. I'm sure, you know, one of your goals, we just mentioned Penske's and Andretti's and Unser's and so many people. By the way, it was great to see Al Unser Jr. and learn that he's a consultant to your team. What a great person to have consulting your team. But when you see those names, and obviously you carry the Steinbrenner name, and you look towards the future, do you ever let yourself dream of what you want in the future? What are your goals that you want to achieve?
The goals really are just, you know, to win the Indy 500, win championships, win. And how that comes about, I don't really see myself, like everyone usually asks me, hey, next year, two cars, hey, 5 years down the line, you want to have two, three, four cars. And for me, it's always however many cars I need to be competitive, that's how many cars I'll run. I'd rather run one car that's capable of winning the Indy 500 or winning a championship, opposed to having two that, you know, you're finishing 10th and 11th every weekend. So for me, it's just the goal is to win, and the vision is really to just do whatever I can to make that happen.
George Steinbrenner IV, you can follow him on Twitter at G Steinbrenner Roman numeral 4. Looks like you get on there semi-often. You like being on Twitter?
I do, and I'm not as active on social media as I maybe should be. It's just not usually my nature, but yeah, I have fun every once in a while. If I have something to tweet or retweet, I have fun interacting with the community.
Yeah, I think they really like interacting with you, and I think they love to see your success at such an early age. And, you know, what you and Colton are building and your whole team is pretty special to watch. So thank you so much for making the time to chat with us on Sports Business Radio. And thanks, like I said, for the meet and greet in person at the Portland Grand Prix. That was a lot of fun, and continued success to you in the future.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Open Doors helps athletes share content on social. Founded in 2012 by two former Nebraska football players, Open Doors has become the world's leading athlete marketing platform. More than 6,000 athletes around the world use Open Doors to receive content from partners and publish to their personal social channels like Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all with one click. Open Doors makes it easier than ever before for brands, including sponsors and licensees and properties, to push approved content through the players' social channels. Leading sports organizations like the PGA Tour, NFL Players Association, Major League Baseball Players Association, the LPGA, and dozens of professional and collegiate sports teams use the platform to send video highlights, photos, GIFs, and more to athletes. The publishing process is very easy and convenient. Once registered, athletes receive a text message when their team, league, or brand partner has content for them to share on social media. The athlete simply reviews the content and hits approve. Open Doors does the rest. If you're an athlete, start using Open Doors as a tool today to build your personal brand and maximize your value on social media. If you're a brand trying to connect with athletes who you thought you'd never be able to gain access to on your own, Open Doors is your solution. Open Doors makes athletes more accessible to the people who support them. Visit opendoors.com or follow them on social media at Open Doors. This year marks the 100th anniversary of one of the most infamous events in American sports history, the Black Sox scandal. If you like the book or the movie Eight Men Out, hear the full story of the 8 Chicago White Sox players who were banned from baseball for conspiring with gamblers to lose the 1919 World Series. New details have been uncovered that provide fresh insight into the scandal. So subscribe to the Infamous America podcast from Black Barrel Media on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any player of your choice. The series is available right now. Guests appearing on Sports Business Radio will receive a dress shirt from Mizzen and Maine. It's like athletic wear disguised as a dress shirt, making them great for travel. No more dry cleaning and no wrinkles. It's a shirt that has worked for thousands of customers, including hundreds of professional athletes like J.J. Watt and Phil Mickelson. It's the most comfortable dress shirt I've ever worn. Head on over to MizzenMaine.com and use promo code SBR to get $10 off your dress shirt. That's MizzenAndMaine.com, code SBR. Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our show staff, Brian Griggs and Josh Blank. Thanks to our friends at Boingo Wireless for powering our Sports Business Radio Roadshow. Follow them online at Boingo.com or on Twitter at Boingo. And we want to remind you all the great places you can get the Sports Business Radio podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find Sports Business Radio. So download us for on-demand listening. Subscribe, rate, and review us as well. We always appreciate the reviews. Follow me on Twitter in between shows at SB Radio. Follow us on Instagram at Sports Business Radio. For Brian Griggs, I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.